I'm glad that you're here this evening. I trust you've got your Bibles with you as we want to conclude our study of the book of Ecclesiastes that we've been over the last 4 or 5 weeks. The book of Ecclesiastes, of course, was written by Solomon. It was written by Solomon to relate to us the experience that he had in life as he sought to find the meaning of life and what brought him happiness and fulfillment. Solomon, as we've mentioned many times, was in a unique position to write about what brings happiness in life because of his power. No one could tell him, no, you're not going to do that. Because of his wealth, nobody could tell him he couldn't purchase that. Because of his women and because of everything he did, he had tried everything in life. And Solomon writes then from the perspective of one who had done all of those things and now is relating that experience to us. In many ways, what Solomon allows us to do is learn from his mistakes. We don't have to repeat the mistakes of Solomon, but rather we can learn from the mistakes that he made and the lessons that he learned in many ways the hard way. And so the message of the book of Ecclesiastes is that without God, life is meaningless. Without God, there is a void in life. Life is not easy. There are difficulties in life. There are things in life that we cannot explain. That doesn't matter who you are. But I've often wondered, how is it that someone that doesn't believe in God and doesn't believe in the Bible, how do they deal with the ups and downs and the struggles of life? What do they use as the guide point by which they navigate through this life? It would be a miserable existence to try to get through this world without a belief in God and without a faith that He is indeed the one that is controlled and directing things in the way that is best for you and for me. And so life is wonderful, but it's only wonderful when we put God in the very center of our lives. And so we need to fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. We'll talk more about that in our study tonight. And Solomon primarily, we've said, is emphasizing for us that serving God is not just about eternity. Now, I don't want to be misunderstood when I emphasize that we primarily serve God for the spiritual blessings that we enjoy in Him. And we do prepare for eternity. And we always have to keep that eternity and that judgment in mind. When the Apostle Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, he said that we make it our aim, whether present or absent, to be well-pleasing unto Him, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. And so we do prepare for the judgment day, and we serve God that we'll be ready when that time comes. But we also need to be reminded that serving God makes for the best life here. And when we serve God, we have the promise of the life that now is, and of that which is to come. And everything else is vanity. That simply means fleeting. It doesn't bring anything that lasts. We noted each of these discourses. Discourse 1 told us, nothing in life can be depended on to bring fulfillment. The ability to enjoy life is a gift that comes from God that He gives to those that He is pleased with. And so we don't have the ability to extract enjoyment from life, a lasting enjoyment from life, apart from God. God has a plan in Discourse 2 that has a purpose. I know God is in control. I don't always understand why God is doing this or that. I can always point in with great confidence and say this is the providence of God versus time and chance. But I do know that God is in control, and while I can never fully appreciate everything and understand everything, I do appreciate the fact that the Most High rules in the kingdoms of men. In chapter 3, or discourse 3, he dealt with some objections. Someone might say, well, if God is in charge, then why? Does it sometimes happen to the righteous according to the wicked and the wicked according to the righteous? Why is it seen that sometimes wickedness is in the place of power and that those that are serving the Lord may face difficult times? And Solomon reminded us that you can't judge a book by its cover. Prosperity is not always nor necessarily a good thing. And adversity is not always nor necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes things that we don't enjoy are things that are good for us. Going to a funeral, reminding ourselves of the frailty of human life. As much as we don't enjoy the day of one's death, the day of death may in reality be better than the day of one's birth. Things are not always what they seem. Also, he deals with the objection to show that sometimes when we say, well, why is he dealing with people this way? Aren't this a good person? Well, remember, we've all transgressed and violated God's law. And God has treated us far better than we deserve. And in this last discourse, he ties up those loose ends, and we're going to draw our grand conclusion in the end. So let's focus in on those last two chapters in our study here tonight. As Solomon begins here in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, I believe in the first six verses, he reminds us that in the living of our lives, that we need to live our life not just for ourselves, but for others. And the need, really, in reality, for benevolence and kindness in support of others. Solomon makes a statement in verse 1 that says we need to cast our bread upon the water, and it will return to you after many days. Think of what does Solomon mean when he's talking about casting our bread upon the water. There are the two main thoughts that biblical students have on that. One is some believe he's talking about the process of engaging in business and trade, that oftentimes grain would be placed on a ship and it would be sent away, and after many days gone, the return of the money and everything would come back to the one that sent it. Certainly Solomon would have related to that as a man engaged in trade and because of his prosperity. And so some see in this an allusion to that trade and to the business that is taking place. I'm going to turn that off. And you can still hear me. But that it's talking about trade and prosperity and the making of money. There are others that see in this, and I think probably rightfully so, the idea of casting our bread upon the water is the idea of using it for philanthropy or for helping others. Being benevolent, Leopold and Kaiser both see it as an instruction of doing kindness toward others. And when we're kind toward others, and we treat others the right way, you know what happens? It comes back to us. What Jesus said in a beatitude that's not recorded in the gospel accounts, but is recorded in the book of Acts chapter 20 and in verse 35, when the Lord said, or Paul said in that verse, that you had heard of the beatitude of our Lord saying that it is more blessed to give than to receive. That is, when you're on the giving end, you're actually benefited even more so than the one that receives the gift or the benevolence. In fact, we need to be very generous in that. In verse 2, he says, give a serving to seven and also to eight, he said, for you do not know what evil will be on the earth. Kaiser just simply sums it up this way. Be liberal and generous to as many as you can, and then some, is the way that we would say it today. So give to seven, and then to eight. Why would we do that? Well, a couple of reasons he gives here. Number one, you don't know, he said, what evil may come upon this earth. In other words, we really don't know what lies ahead. It may well be that some point in time, the roles are reversed. Have you ever known somebody that was very generous, and then and later on in life, the roles were reversed, and they needed someone to help or to assist them? Some believe that when he's saying you don't know what lies ahead, he's suggesting to them that you don't know when you might need someone to be generous and kind and benevolent towards you. And that should motivate you then to be kind and benevolent toward others. Others believe, and I think it's probably a combination of the two here, that oftentimes we have excuses for not doing what we need to be doing with regard to helping others and being kind. You ever known someone that said, well, I'd like to, but you know, I just don't know with it what. I may need that later on. I could be benevolent and help, but you know what? We may be on the verge of a recession, so I better just what? Hold on to what I have, and I'm not going to be benevolent and help those that are in need. We're always anticipating that the worst is going to be ahead. And what Solomon reminds us in this text is don't use these excuses. A cloud that is full gives out its rain in verse 3. If the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And so, just like a full cloud dumps its rain, when we've been blessed by God, you know what we need to do? We need to disperse those blessings on others. And if a tree falls, he says, to the south or the north, in the place where it falls, there it shall lie. Some believe that Solomon is saying there are things we know we can't control, and therefore we just have to accept it. Others believe that what he's saying there is when a tree falls, wherever it falls, it's a benefit to what? To the one that receives it, particularly in a day when wood would have been used to heat and to cool even more so than our day and time. So be generous. Take what you have and give it, just like the clouds dump their rain, just like the tree provides its wood for the benefit of others. You need to take what God has given you and use it to bless other people. How many times in the New Testament is similar advice given to us? We need to work with our hands. We may have to do what? To give to him that has need. Command those that are rich in this present age not to be haughty, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who richly gives us all things to enjoy, that they may be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share, that they may lay up for themselves a foundation, he said, for the life that is to come. That's in 1 Timothy chapter 6. And so Solomon's advice is don't be self-centered in how you live your life, but focus upon others and be kind and be benevolent. One other thing he said, by the way, here in verse 4, he who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not weep. And that is, if we're looking for excuses, we can always come up with excuses. It's like the farmer, he said here, that is waiting for the perfect circumstance in order to sow his garden. And if he wants to look for the perfect circumstance, guess what? It's always going to be too windy, it's going to be too dry, it's going to be too wet, and he'll always find a reason to put off doing what he needs to be doing. And Solomon's advice is, don't have that disposition or that attitude. And verse 5 reminds us, before we go on, that while we can't explain the wind or how the bones grow in the womb of her who is the child, we know that takes place, and I know that God is the one that's in control of everything. A couple of different ways those verses are translated. You probably know this. But the word for wind in both the Hebrew and in the Greek, and the word for spirit, are one and the same. I don't know the Hebrew word. It's the word pneuma in the Greek language. And so sometimes you'll have the word wind and you'll have the word spirit. And sometimes if you compare two translations side by side, one will say wind and one will say spirit. So some translations here, the New King James says, we don't know about the wind. The wind was blowing pretty good when I came in this evening, and I could feel it blowing. But if you said, Mike, can you explain the wind to me? I don't know. But I know it blows. I know when I see a woman with a child, that child is forming in her womb, and the bones are forming, and the organs are forming. If you ask me, how does all that take place beyond me answering and saying it's the work of God who put all that into practice, most people can't explain it, but we know it's there. Others believe, by the way, if the translation of the ESV, I think it's the ESV, is correct, that talks about the spirit in the child. In other words, we have the physical part of the child, but you know, there's also within that child the soul or the spirit. How does the spirit, and when does the spirit and the soul get in the body of that child? I don't know. But I know it does. So it is, he said, with the work of God. And all that simply saying is just because we can't explain something doesn't mean that it's not happening, it's not real, and God is the one that's in control of everything. And when we make excuses because it's raining, because it's to not do what we should be doing, it really is an indication of a lack of faith in the providence and the working of God. Then in verses 7, through verse 8, he said, enjoy life, but remember there is a judgment day that is coming. Truly the light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to behold the sun. Most of us like a good sunny day. I don't know about you, I'm about ready for springtime to come. And we enjoy the warm weather and the light and the sunshine. It's a beautiful thing. And he said, if a man lives many years and rejoices in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many, all that is coming is vanity. And what Solomon is saying there about life is we need to enjoy life. It is sweet. But if you have a man that has lived many years upon this earth, and he has enjoyed every one of them, there's probably some hyperbole involved there, he knows that eventually, But guess what's coming? Days of darkness are coming. Some believe that is a reference to death itself, and a reminder that death is going to come, and there's nothing that you or I can do that is going to change that. We can watch our diet, we can exercise, we can go to the diet. I go to the doctor every time we stump our toe, and guess what's going to happen to us in the end? We're all going to die. Those difficult days, those days of darkness are going to come. Others believe that the days of darkness are not specifically the days of death, but the days that lead up to death. In other words, it is you're going to grow older, and life is going to become more difficult, and all that we enjoy right now is going to pass away. And I really do believe that Solomon, particularly as he's writing to young people, in the remainder of chapter 11 and into chapter 12, is reminding them how brief life really is and how fleeting it is. How many of you wish you could go back to your youth and realize when you were young that those days weren't going to be there all that long? I'm not asking, do you want to go back and relive those days? But how many of you would like to go back and appreciate the fact that I'm not going to be able to live these days of my youth forever? They're going to pass very, very quickly. I tell people all the time, particularly if I was talking to young people, that you realize that, you know, one day it looks like you're finishing school and, you know, you think you're never going to grow older, and you turn around the next minute and guess what? Your kids are growing up. Or maybe they've grown up and they've left home, and you look in the mirror and you realize that you're growing older. And as he's going to describe over here, the hair is turning gray or turning loose, and the physical strength is not there. There's a reminder, enjoy life because the days are fleeting. You're not going to live forever, and you're not going to be young forever. And so what he tells Solomon here, or what Solomon tells the young man in verses 9 through verse 10, is rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Enjoy being young. Enjoy doing the things that you enjoy doing. Because you're not going to be there forever. There's nothing wrong with a young person enjoying being young. There's nothing wrong with them enjoying that period of time in their life. Sometimes when they have less cares and less things that are going to weigh them down than they're going to have to experience in the latter part of their life. Enjoy that. But as you enjoy that, keep two fundamental points, as he said, in mind. And that is, you have to remember that someday you're going to have to give an account for what you do. It's not Solomon saying here, you just live it up, you sow your wild oats, and you just do what? Whatever you want to do when you're young. That's not Solomon's advice. His advice is, enjoy being young, but always keep in mind, there's a judgment day that is going to come. And you're going to have to give an account for what you did in your youth. There's a difference in being young and being unaccountable. Young people are accountable for the decisions they make and the things that they do. And we're all going to have to give an account of ourselves before God. And so Solomon is saying, when you make the decision, am I going to do this or not do this? You've always got to remember, you know what? I'm going to have to stand before God in judgment someday, and I'm going to have to give an account for what I'm doing and make decisions that are therefore in keeping with God's law. So walk in the ways of your heart and the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh. What does that mean? It means don't do anything that is going to inflict pain and harm upon you, either physically or spiritually for that matter. I think primarily he's talking about the spiritual implications here. Put away all those things that cause pain and sorrow. For childhood and the dawn of life, or childhood and the prime of life, are vanity. I think one thing Solomon is probably reminding his listeners of is that what we do when we're young, we have to live with when we're old. Whatever decisions we make when we are young, we have to live with the ramifications of those when we're old. And it is true that I can do things in my youth, and for that I'm grateful that we can be forgiven of, but that doesn't always erase the pain, does it? That doesn't always erase the difficulties of that. I mean, let me illustrate that if I can. A young person may decide that they're going to engage in premarital sexual relations, and now all of a sudden they're with a child. Can they be forgiven of that? Absolutely. I know many that have. You know, sometimes the impact of that, you know what it leads to? Sometimes it can affect what? The entirety of their lives. The decisions that they make. Drugs, alcohol. Sometimes those things have long-lasting implications far beyond the days of youth. Put away anything that would inflict pain, anything that would cause harm, anything that you're going to look back in life with regret on. I have stood at the bedside of more than one person as they were either dying or sometimes right at the point of death. I've been there. And I tell you what, I've never had anybody say. I've had more than one person. I remember a family that I was very close to in the place that I first preached. You've heard me talk about a family that I would say I was a much bigger preacher for having known them. They were a couple that when I was a young single preacher moved to a hole in the wall in Alabama, had one flashing red light, and that's about it. And they fed me every single Sunday night. They'd have me over their home, and they'd either an older couple in their 80s at that point in time. I don't know how many times he'd slide over three quarters of a pie and say, "Mike, why don't you just go ahead and clean that up?" And I did. But you know what? He didn't obey the gospel when he was in his 70s. He was in his, like I said, his wife had been a Christian her entire life. I can't, when I read 1 Peter 3, I think of her, among other women. She would walk down the mountain to church. And wouldn't let him keep her from going when they first got married. But they were married for over 50 years when finally he obeyed the gospel. And I tell you what, I have seen him pray with tears running down his eyes, "Lord, please forgive me that I wasted so many years. I wish I could go back when my children were small. I wish I could go back and rear them again." And I remember when he died. I've been more than one time where somebody said, "Mike, I wish I could go back and I could give my life and my strength and my youth to the Lord." You know what I've never been? I've never been by somebody's bedside where they looked over at me and said, "Mike, you know what? Here I am at the end of my life. And if I could just go back now, knowing that I'm going to live to be 90 years old or 85 years old, if I could just live my life, I'd sure sow a wild of wild oats." See, what I'd do is I'd live a life of rebellion. I'd enjoy being but nobody ever says that. Nobody regrets living their lives in service to God. But more than once, I've seen somebody look back and regret that they didn't give God the strength of their youth. What he's telling the recipients is, enjoy your life. Enjoy being young, but always keep in mind the judgment that's coming, and always keep in mind you don't want to do anything to inflict lasting harm and damage that you're going to build scars with or live with regret as you get older. If I had been combining the verses and chapters of the book of Ecclesiastes, I really think I would have included verse 1 of chapter 12 with the end of chapter 11. This says, "Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Before the difficult days come and the years draw nigh, and when you say, 'I have no pleasure in them.'" So while you're young, remember God and give Him the strength of your youth. He's not suggesting any way that those that are older can't turn to the Lord and give their lives to Him. Although, let me just say this. If statistics tell us anything, several years ago, I remember seeing a survey done over the denominational landscape. I mean, so it wasn't a survey done of God's people, but it was just the religious world as a whole. And the survey had to do the age with which one, quote, decided they were going to serve the Lord and or give their lives to the Lord. I do understand that many of those that answered probably don't understand what that means fully. But the survey came back and said the vast majority of people that decide they're going to serve the Lord do so by the time that they reach the age of 21. That's pretty young. And those that don't decide, by that time they're going to give God their lives, most of the time, you know what happens? They never get around to doing it. I'm not suggesting that there are not people that come after that point in time, but I'm saying usually those are decisions that are made when we're young that then impact the rest of our lives. And so remember your Creator in the days of your youth before the difficult days come. What are the difficult days that are going to come? that are described in verses 1 through verse 5. And it's obvious to me that he's describing the process of growing older. And he describes it as a storm that's coming. When the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are not darkened, and the clouds do not return after the rain, that's describing the time prior to us getting older. He's saying it's a time when the sun's still shining, and the moon and the stars are not darkened. And by the way, Solomon is not writing this primarily so that as you get older, you'll look at that and say, oh man, I can relate to that. He's not writing it so that we look at that and say, man, that's what I've got to look forward to. He's writing it to tell young people, this is the way life goes. If you live long enough, it is just the natural process of life. You're young, those days pass quickly, and the next thing you know, you're old. And what happens is, the keepers of the house tremble. You know what? Your arms aren't as strong as they used to be. And the strong men bow down. That means the legs, they don't carry as quite the way they used to. They're not as strong. The grinders cease because they're few. Your teeth begin chipping away. And sometimes you can't eat the way you used to eat because of the grinder ceasing. Those that look through the windows grow dim. You know what happens? Pretty soon you figure out your arms aren't long enough anymore to be able to read. Your eyes begin to get a little bit, it's harder to see than it used to be. The doors are shut in the streets and the sound of grinding is low. Ears don't hear as well as they used to hear. The one that rises up in the sound of a bird, you still get up early in the morning. I can remember growing up. My dad's dad was older by the time I was born. By the time I was a teenager, he died at the age of 93. But he was in his 80s when I was a teenager. And I can remember going and staying at their house and wondering, why in the world did they get up at 5 o'clock in the morning? They didn't have a place to be. They didn't have a thing in this world to do. And they got up at 5 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes they took a nap at 7. But you know what? They still got up early in the morning. And that's exactly what Solomon is saying here. They don't have a lot to do yet. They still get up. You know, sometimes the reason they rise because of the pain of staying in bed or because they can't sleep. I remember visiting an elderly lady one time and I came in to visit her. I think it was like 10 o'clock in the afternoon. I asked her how she was doing. She said, I was sorry this morning. I just couldn't get out of bed. And she kept going about how she slept. And I said, well, what time did you get up? She said, I didn't get up until nearly 4:30 this morning. But that's the way her life didn't have anywhere to go. But she rose at that time every morning. Not only that, the daughters of music are brought low. Your voice is not as strong as it used to be. The singing that you used to do and be able to bell around now is a little bit more muted. At least it is at times with some. They're afraid of heights. That man that used to scale that ladder and walk that roof, you know, he gets a point in time now where either he has to stand at the bottom and think about whether he's going to do it, or he just realizes, you know what, those days are gone. It's too dangerous for me to do that. And terrors are in the way. Things that one once would have done fearlessly now are done with some degree of trepidation. Sometimes people even get to the shape that things that were ordinarily parts of their day, now they're worried about falling or they're worried. That's just the aging process. And what Solomon is telling these young people, this is what you've got ahead in your future if you live long enough. And here's the point Solomon is making. You're not always going to have the strength of your youth. And you're not going to be able to give God the same strength and the same vigor when you're older than you are when you're younger, because you're going to age just like everyone else does. The almond tree blossoms. That seems to be a reference to the hair turning white. The grasshopper is a burden. That's figurative language. Have you ever looked at a grasshopper and thought, I just don't know if I can lift that or not? A grasshopper is a pretty small insect. But the idea about it being a burden is things that were once light now become more difficult. Desire fails, or the capillary fails. It seems to me that sexual desire is no longer as strong as it used to be, or even as important used to be. And then, at the end of verse 9, you know what comes after that? Death. You go to your eternal home. And the mourners go about the streets. In other words, you're young, you turn around, and you're going to be experiencing all of these things, and then you're going to die. How do you want to have lived your life when that time comes? And the answer is, you want to have given your life in service to God. So remember your Creator in verse 6. Listen, before the silver cord is loosed, the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the well. All of those are just differing figures that say, remember God before you die. Because when you die, it's too late then to decide you're going to turn and give your life to God. Because here's what happens when we die. That's not the end of us. The dust returns to the earth from whence it came. Remember when sin entered this world? The Bible said, from dust you are, and until dust you shall return, after sin was introduced into this earth. This physical body that I see, your physical body that I can see, it is made out of dust, and someday it's going to go right back to the dust. It'll be placed in the ground, and it'll decay. But there's a part of me that's not placed in the ground. There's a part of me that doesn't cease, and that is my spirit. And the spirit, it said, returns to God that gave it. In other words, it's going to be in God's hands to determine what's going to happen to that soul. Is it going to be in heaven or is it going to be in hell? Is it going to be on the right side or is it going to be on the left side? That's what death is. When somebody dies, death is the separation of the body from the spirit, James chapter 2 tells us. So remember your Lord before all those things happen. And then he closes in verse 8 by saying, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. It's all fleeting. You know, one of the things that I enjoy sitting down sometimes talking to older folks, sometimes I enjoy sitting down and talking about how they lived and things they endured. But you know, one of the things I've always noticed, almost any time you have the opportunity to sit down and talk to them, they may live to be 90, they may live to be nearly 100, and every one of them will tell you it all passed quickly. It's all fleeting. I've never sat down with anybody of any age that said, you know what, it's just been long. Instead, what they say is it's been fleeting. It's been brief. That's the way all of life is. So what do we do? Here's Solomon's conclusion. The preacher came, and Solomon is the preacher, to teach people knowledge. He was wise, and he taught people knowledge, and he set out many proverbs, and he tried to put it down in acceptable words, what was upright, and words of truth. There are some saying, I'm trying to come to give you wisdom on how to live. And the words of the preacher, he said, are the words of the wise, rather, verse 11, are like goads, and the words of a scholar are like well-driven nails given by one shepherd. You know what a goad is? I guess today, if we were writing this, our vernacular in 2023, we might compare it to a cattle prod. But that idea of a goat, you remember when the Lord appeared to Saul on the road to Damascus and he said, it's hard for you to kick against the goats. And the goat was that pointed stick when the oxen or the donkey were to kick back, that goat prompted them, motivated them to go forward and not kick back anymore. And so when he says the words of the wise are like goads, he said they're designed to motivate, to get us going, to encourage us in the right direction. And they're like well-driven nails. There's something you can build your life on. You can hang your head on it. Think about a nail that's been driven in that holds well. And he's saying there in that way that's what the words of the wise are like. And then, verse 12, he says in verse 12, and further, my son, be admonished by these, of making many books there is no end, and much study is wearisome to the flesh. When you read through the New King James, you're sort of left, if you're like me, sort of wondering, okay, what does that mean? Why all of a sudden does Solomon say to his audience, there are a lot of books that are written, and it wears you out to study? But if you look at the English Standard Version or other translations, I think it is much more clear what the point of the wise man Solomon is in this verse. The English Standard Version, instead of saying, be admonished by these, it words it this way. My son, beware of anything beyond these. Of making many books, there is no end. And much study is a wearisome to the flesh. The LSB said, beyond this, my son, be warned. The writing of many books is endless. And excessive devotion to the books is wearying to the body. Now, here's the point. Men have sought throughout the existence, and I guess to figure out what's life about. And if we got in our car right now and we went down and we went to the bookstore, because there's still one here in town, there will be again soon, I think, but we could probably go to the self-help section. You know what we'd see? We'd just see book after book. Here's how you want to build, here's how to be happy. And here's what you need to do to have a successful family relationship. Here's what you got to do in the rearing of your children. And you know, the vast majority of those aren't worth the paper they're printed on. They're not worth anything. Do you know why? Because they're different from what God says in His Word. And what Solomon is saying, you literally can wear yourself out in the study and the pursuit of all of that knowledge, but you don't have to, because you know true wisdom comes from God. It comes from the one shepherd. And if it disagrees with what's contained in this book, then it's not wise. I don't care how many letters the person has at the end of their name. I don't care how many books it sells. I don't care how well it reads. If it differs from what the Bible says, it's not wisdom. And so what he's telling Solomon, Solomon is telling his audience, is if anything differs from what I have told you, don't listen to it. You literally can wear yourselves out, but you don't have to, because it's all found right here. So, what everybody looks for when the preacher's preaching, let us hear the conclusion. The conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God, love, and keep His commandments. For this is the whole of man. Solomon said, let me just sum it all up for you. You know what life's about? Fear and serve God. This is man's all. There are about three different ways that that is translated. Some translate it, I believe J.D. read from the New American Standard Translation, and excellent translation, but he said there that this applies to all mankind, or something to that effect. And there are a number of translations that render it that way, that this applies to all man, all mankind. There are other translations that render this is the whole duty of man, the Old King James. If you got an old edition of the New King James, it rendered it that way, but they changed it. The ESV may say the whole duty of man. And it's a word that's added by the text. The New King James now just said this is man's all. But I want to tell you what I think that means for what it's worth. And I've said this many times through our study. I don't think he's just simply saying this is the duty of man, because that requires a word to be added. That's not great. Now, I don't think he's saying that this is the duty of all mankind, or this applies to all mankind, because while that's true, it requires the addition of the word mankind. But rather, I think what he's saying is this is the whole of man. He's saying, I've showed you what I have pursued and what I have went after. And when I went after wealth, guess what? There was still something missing. There was a piece of the puzzle that wasn't there. Can you relate to that? Have there been times in your life where you were too busy pursuing popularity? You were too busy pursuing wealth to the neglect of spiritual things. And though you might have been doing well at work and climbing up, something was what? Something was missing. Maybe you live for popularity. But you know what fits in that part that makes man complete and whole? You know, the only thing that can fill that piece of the missing puzzle is God. And Solomon is saying, I learned that the hard way. You want to be whole. You want to be complete. You want to feel like there's nothing that's missing. Fear God and keep His commandments. This is the whole duty of man. And then finally, he reminds us, for God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. One reason that needs to be my goal in life is because there's going to come a time I'm going to stand before God, and I'm going to give account for how I live my life. And here's what I need to remember about that. I may be able to fool you about the kind of life I live. You may be able to fool me about the kind of life that you live. And we can put on a facade for others to see. But you know when the judgment day was going to happen? It's all going to be laid naked and bare before God. Even those secret things, God knows about them, and I'll have to give an account. So in light of that, Solomon says, fear God and keep his commandments. It makes for the best life here, and it will prepare you for eternity. And I promise, I believe with every fiber of my being, if you live that kind of life, when it comes to death, you're not going to look back with regret. But you'll have been glad that you lived your life in service to God. And I know you'll be glad in the judgment day when you stand before Him and give up. What about you, God? Have you been giving your life in service to God in that way? I hope that you have. If you haven't yet obeyed the gospel, then why not obey it tonight? Be buried in waters of baptism. Or maybe there's somebody here that's obeyed the gospel and has wandered away from the Lord and needs to come back. No matter what your need is, take back this opportunity. There may not be another. We don't know what lies ahead. Solomon said that more than once in the book of Ecclesiastes. You know this is the only time you have. Why not get things right? Why not do it right now? It's good to be staying.